If you've been struggling with a patchy lawn all summer, your time is now. This hour, we'll talk about late summer lawn care. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. I'll talk with Iowa State University Extension turf grass specialist Adam Toms about lawn care, seeding, reseeding, core aeration, and other late summer tasks. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Adam will answer your questions. 866-780-9100 or Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
Six.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and coming up in a few minutes, Forester Mark Vitosh will be here to answer your tree questions. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be here to answer your plant questions. But first, if your question is it time to seed my lawn? The answer is yes. Iowa State University Extension turf grass specialist Adam Toms is here. Hello, Adam.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Sure, no problem.
And as Richard can tell you, we've been fielding that question all spring and summer, and now it is actually time. You can seed your lawn now, right?
Yep, it's finally time to repair your lawn and repair all that summer damage that was done. So,
all right, so as we think about these late summer lawn care tasks that we can accomplish, let's do a little triage on a lawn. What kind of problems are you seeing from this summer, and then how should we react to them?
Yeah, we're seeing a ton of drought damage and heat damage from the prolonged period that we had the high temps and low amount of water. So, you know, first the grasses went dormant, and then as the dormancy continued and the lack of water, we actually started to lose a lot of grass. And so,
How can you tell the difference between a dormant lawn and a dead lawn?
Sure. One of the great things to do is to actually get out and pull on the lawn, you know, especially if the grass is still yellow looking. If it pulls right up in big chunks in your hand, it's probably dead. If there's still some resistance, then it's probably coming back. With the rains we've had throughout Iowa the last couple weeks, most of the grass, if it's going to come back, is starting to green back up. If it hasn't shown any signs of life, it's probably dead.
Okay. So you're in trouble there. So if you've got a big patch on your lawn that's dead, what do you do?
Yeah, so what we always like to suggest is right now is a great time to aerify, and I would aerify your whole yard. That just allows gas exchange down for the roots, builds a stronger turf plant of the existing turf that's there, and then it also creates holes for when you go out and overseed those dead patches. And so, you know, spreading some seed into those areas after you've aerified is great, and then a little fertilizer as well to help that growth.
And is doing the aeration, is that enough if you're seeding a patch of your lawn?
You know, if you can scratch it up a little bit more, that's great, because that would just protect the seed a little bit more, creates a little bit easier spot for the seed to germinate in, a little easier conditions. But, you know, if you don't want to tear up your whole yard or if the damage isn't too extensive, just basic aeration, pulling some cores and leaving those on the surface would help.
Okay, so you don't have to try to rake away all the dead grass?
No, that's not really necessary.
All right, and when we talk about seeding or overseeding, draw the distinction there for me.
Sure. So seeding typically is done in an area that has nothing living, no live tissue anymore. And so that's a fresh start to that area. Overseeding is just adding grass to thicken up an area. Maybe you have a small patch, you know, where it's just clumps of grass. And so that's where you would actually do what the process is called overseeding.
All right. And do you want to have a little bit of an overlap if you're dealing with a dead part of your lawn so things start to blend in and don't look radically different?
Yeah, ideally, you definitely would want to try to overlap and spread some of that seed out because, you know, the seed that you buy now might be different from what's in the yard, and so then you might have a patchy look in the yard. So spreading a little bit of that throughout the yard will help blend it.
All right, and when you talk about aeration, give me some pointers on that. Is that something you need to go rent some equipment to accomplish?
Yeah, the best aerifiers are ones that actually pull a core, and so, you know, most Professional lawn care companies have an aerifier that you could get on their schedule, or you could rent a aerifier at like a local hardware store or something like that. Just make sure that it's got a hole that actually pulls and removes a core from the ground. That's the best type.
And how often should you be doing that?
Aerifying once in the fall is good. If you have a highly compacted or heavy clay yard, then you'd like to do it in the spring and the fall.
And let's say you haven't done it in a really long time. If you do it this fall, do you need to try to do it a little more often to get things back on par?
You know, if you haven't done it in a long time, doing it this fall, if your yard's not in too bad a shape, then you could just jump back into the every fall cycle. If you've got patches in your yard that have thinned out, then I would probably jump into the twice a year and try to get it back to speed.
Is this also the time of year when you should look at the makeup of your yard? If your grass isn't all dead or dormant, looking at what kind of mixture you have there?
Yeah, it's a great time to do that. You know, if you weren't happy with the fact that your grass went dormant in the summer months, you could change, spray out the grass that's there, and then reseed to a variety that you might like a little bit better, or you know, something that stays greener longer, like a tall fescue versus a bluegrass.
And is this also a good time to kind of pick out trouble spots in the lawn, things that are going to require a little more help over the years?
Yeah, definitely. Now's the time to do maintenance, try to improve your yard. It'll set you up for a better growing season next year, whatever work you do now. And so, you know, working with those trouble spots, adding compost to your yard, if it doesn't take a lot of water, you know, if most of the water runs off, that's a great way to improve water infiltration. And so now's a great time to do that, especially yards that are heavily compacted.
Looking at weed control, is there something we should be thinking about in that arena right now as well?
Weed control, the only real weed control right now, you know, that you'd really need to be worried about is like quack grass or grasses that you want to kill out, and that would be a non-selective type spray that you'd be doing there. Broadleaf weed control, we always say to wait after the first frost, and then later is even better. That would increase your chances of actually removing the broadleaves. And then, of course, crabgrass control, we always like to do that in the spring and put out a crabgrass preventer.
All right. I know you've got a turf grass field day coming up at the Horticulture Research Station on September 12th. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we have our annual field day coming up. We're pretty excited about that. Traditionally, it's been, you know, mostly for professional turf grass managers, but we're always looking to share our knowledge with individuals that are interested in learning more about how to make a better yard. And so we've got three separate sections there. We've got one designed more for the golf course sports turf, and then the home lawn care division. And so showing off our test plots of, you know, new cultivar trials and showing what grasses are doing really well in Iowa. We're also talking about management techniques, various herbicide trials, alternative herbicides, some traffic tolerance for athletic fields, athletic field managers, you know, how to make athletic fields safer. We spend a lot of time researching that, and so we're going to be showing off some of that work as well. And then that'll be from 9 to noon, and then after lunch is our demo time period, and so we're going to have a lot of demonstrations of new turf equipment, different machines, new aerification equipment, things like that. So you could actually hop on some of these or watch how these new machines work.
All right, so that's the turf grass field day coming up at the Horticulture Research Station on September 12th. There's also a very big event coming up at the Horticulture Research Station on September 16th, celebrating the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the Horticulture Research Station. Richard Duran, is that right?
Correct, yes.
All right, and I'll be there for that, so that'll be a whole lot of fun as well. We'll talk more about that as it comes up. But let's open up the phones to calls right now. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Adam Toms is here, turf grass specialist, and we're already getting some lawn care questions for you, Adam. And I want to say hello to Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And district forester, or DNR forester, Mark Vitosh is here. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And that means you can ask your tree questions, your plant questions, your turf grass questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Here's a question for you, Adam, from Sam in West Des Moines. Is there a benefit or no benefit to deeper core aeration in the lawn? The typical aerator only goes down an inch or so and forms those little plugs. There are those that go down 4 to 6 inches. Are those better?
Yeah, so it depends on your situation. We always like to say that if you can pull a deeper core, that's better. That would allow a larger channel, more of the root zone, to get a gas exchange. Of course, typically getting those deeper, longer cores, or those core aerifiers, is going to cost more money to get down deeper. So if you can get that, that's a great thing. That affects more of the root zone. That's a better product. Yeah, definitely.
All right. And the next question is actually about killing grass. So maybe that's not as much your arena. This one's from Jesse in Norwalk. Last spring, we planted a garden in a former part of the yard. We did not sufficiently kill the grass before doing so. We battled grass all season long. Is there something I can do between now and next spring to chemically free kill off the grass? Can I just cover it up or something?
Well, you can till it up and hopefully remove any plant parts that you find. You could do that. And that will kill most of your grasses. So I would till it and maybe come back maybe toward the end of October and do it again.
All right. And then should they mulch it or something like that after they till it?
I think just tilling it would physically destroy most of the grass. And I would try to pull out any clumps of grass I find once I do that.
All right, and what's wrong with the idea of just covering it with landscape cloth or something like that?
I suppose they could, a heavy tarp.
All right, but you got to really work on keeping that
in place, yes.
All right. Iowa winters aren't usually compatible with keeping things like that
right.
in place.
Our fall.
Right, true. Let's get to the phone. Sarah is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I am wondering what to do about moss in my lawn.
Moss in your lawn. You want to get rid of it?
Yes.
Well, first of all, I would say the moss is not destroying the grass. It's not harming the grass. Moss is simply an organism that will grow almost anywhere. It grows in very difficult locations. It will grow basically on the roof of your house if you have a lot of shade. It grows on inanimate objects. So you can rake it up. It doesn't have much of a root system, but it will come back if there's not grass occupying the space. So your typical recommendation would be to maybe try to encourage turf growth where you get a thicker, dense turf. And if you have that space occupied by grass, the moss really isn't there.
All right, so back to the beginning of the show where we talk about seeding and overseeding. If she grows enough grass, it will just choke out the moss.
Well,
that's the idea?
Right, it won't come back because it really needs an empty space. So if they have a lot of shade, then obviously they probably want to use some of the shade-tolerant grasses like the fine-leaf fescues, and that will do much better than bluegrass.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me today, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron, ISU Extension Turfgrass Specialist Adam Toms, and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. We'll continue our conversation in a moment, and you are welcome to call 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about your lawn, about all of the different plants in your life, your trees. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron, and ISU Extension Turfgrass Specialist Adam Toms. And let's go to a tree question here. Tim is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Tim.
Hi,
what's your question?
I have a sugar maple that got damaged maybe 5 or 6 years ago. It's probably only 7 or 8 years old. but it's kind of turned into a big bush, and I'm wondering how I can, or when I can trim that and try and turn it back into a, you know, single trunk tree.
So, Tim, actually, since we're getting in the fall, I would probably wait, and you got a couple options. We always used to say during the dormant season, and now we actually say, especially with maples, crab apples, other species like that, pruning actually early summer is not a bad time. But if you need to do some fixing, what I would probably do, that the one time or a couple times I like to avoid, is in the spring when they're leafing out, and in the fall when we start getting close to leaf color change, which we're a month or so two away.
But except for not, the really stressed trees.
Right, there's
that
some
are
really
changing.
Stressed trees. So what I would do is I would probably wait until the dormant season and start looking at it there and try to pick something out that's going to be the straightest or most connected to allow you. And then you may have to cut a few other branches back to what we call lateral branches, or actually reduce the length of some of those branches to let that top one be the dominant one. There's a really good publication from actually the University of University of Florida on pruning and developing young trees, and they kind of talk about how you can cut those branches. The thing you don't want to do is top a tree, but you can cut it in a way that you can actually control where those branches go, and you can control the length of the branches to put the energy towards the branches that you want. So I would wait till this winter and do it then.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Tim. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Don is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Don.
Good morning. I have a question about a endless summer hydrangea. It's been there a number of years now, and it's standing right now about 4.5 feet tall and probably almost 6 feet wide, so it's big. But my question, I have really two questions: when and how to prune it, and what's the really proper way to be watering?
Okay, I would wait and do it in the spring. And actually, what I would do would be to allow it to leaf out in the spring, and then prune out the dead wood. That's a big leaf hydrangea, and depending on the weather in winter, you may see extensive dieback, or it may be very light. But I would wait and then prune out the dead wood in early spring. Now, that plant blooms on new growth and old growth. So if you don't have a lot of dieback in the winter, it should bloom early in the summer and then later in the summer on the new growth. So I would just wait and do it basically in the spring. Let it leaf out first and then prune out the dead wood. You can do some minor shaping if it's kind of lopsided, but I would do it then. Let it leaf out first. As far as watering, they're not very drought tolerant. So when you have these prolonged dry periods, I would go out there and water them on a regular basis. When you do so, really soak the ground nice and deep and slowly, and you should be fine for hopefully several days.
Okay, and then in terms of winter damage, I saw something about mulching, but this kind of a plant is very difficult to mulch because there's dozens of stems.
Right, right. Some people do try that, where they might take some, for example, some chicken wire fencing and place that around the actual plant, let's say in November after leaf drop, and then maybe fill that cylinder with some straw or some leaves to provide some extra protection. So you could do that, and that might reduce the amount of dieback in winter.
Okay, but if there is dieback, then I would just cut below, just a little below the dieback, and
Right. So if there is a lot of dieback, you're going to have to prune that out, and it's not going to bloom in early summer, but it should bloom late in the summer on the new growth.
Okay, and that's what I'm getting now. But is it easy to overwater too much?
Well, it's a possibility. They like a moist soil, continually moist, but if they don't like a wet soil. If you keep it saturated, you may get a root rot, and that may cause the plant to decline and eventually die. So consistent moisture is good, but not too wet.
And this summer it would have been really hard to overwater.
Oh, right, it would have been. Unless you're out there every day.
Right. Well, Don, thank you so much for your call. And we've got another Don with a question about a hydrangea from Newton. He says, we have a limelight hydrangea in a very shady area, and it has never fully bloomed. We'd like to move it to a sunny spot and wonder if we can do that now, and how much should we trim it down? It's about 2 feet tall.
I would prefer to do that in early spring, like early April, before it begins to leaf out. And a two-foot-tall plant is not very big, so I'm not sure the problem there. It should be much bigger than that. But I would try to do that in the spring early before it begins to leaf out. And if it's only 2 feet tall, you can leave it at that size. It should be fine.
All right. And the fact that it's only 2 feet tall indicates that maybe need to move.
And I would probably put it probably in partial sun, maybe where it gets maybe 4 or 5, 6 hours of sun, preferably morning sun, afternoon shade.
All right. And we've got a turf question for you, Adam. This one's from Mark. What should I do to have a nice lawn without using chemicals?
So one of the options, turf grass needs to be fed every year. And so fertilizing, trying to feed the plant. And corn gluten meal works well for that. You can get that at a lot of home improvement stores. And that also works an application in April, and then again in September we'll feed the yard, and then it will also work as a pre-emerge in the spring to prevent crabgrass. So that would be a good option. The other thing to avoid using chemicals, maintaining your grass at a proper height, 3 inches, 3.5 inches, that'll help keep more canopy and shade out weeds.
All right, and then if you have something encroaching in your lawn, like creeping Charlie, ground ivy, that kind of thing, you kind of have to start pulling it right away. You got to stay on top of that, right?
Yeah, a lot of hand pulling then. Yep.
All right. Mark, thanks a lot for your question, and let's go to Steve in Moline. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, thank you for taking my phone call. I like your program. I try to listen to it every Friday. It's very informative. I have an ongoing problem with some fungus in my yard, and I aerate every fall and, you know, a fertilizer and overseed, a slit seeder, and the results are excellent. And then in the spring, it's great, but as the summer wears on, the fungus starts to show up. I put an F-prot down on it, which sort of mitigates it, but is there any way to get that out of the yard, or is it just something you just have to sort of try to hold your own?
I'm not sure what type of grass you have in your yard.
Is it mostly bluegrass?
Mostly bluegrass. Okay. And you know, you can try a couple different things. Try to make the conditions less likely for fungus. So, you know, applying fertilizer, like a slow release type product in the early spring, and then making sure that there's no nitrogen available in the summer months, and then applying fertilizer again in the fall, just to try to keep it more lean. And then the other thing is watering. If you can try to avoid watering at night, that would help make it less likely for fungus to develop. Those would be the two things that I
would.
What's that?
I do all of the above, and it always seems to come back, you know, July and August this time of year. And again, the F-prot sort of slows it down, but it's tough. Can't get rid of it.
Yeah. I would suggest next summer maybe sending off a sample to the disease clinic, try to get an exact identification of what fungus it is, and then you can apply a fungicide preventatively in the future once you know what fungus it is, if it's a yearly problem.
All right. Figure out exactly what you're dealing with there. Steve, thank you so much for your call. Dennis is on the line next in Polk City. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. In the fall, to applicate a fertilizer or something like that, type of fertilizer or method of applicating that would be the best to not leave like a groundwater or runoff. What would you recommend?
All right, so the best type of fertilizer to control the pollution issues.
Sure, the best type of fertilizer is a slow-release fertilizer, and then you can rotary spread that. That's fine. Make sure to apply, you know, no more than 3/4 to 1 pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet. That's exactly the amount that the plant will take up. And then make sure to clean it off of hard surfaces. So sweep your sidewalks, sweep your streets, put that back on the grass, and that way that grass will actually take it up and it won't have any pollution.
Is this another possible application for corn gluten meal? Because there's not a problem with runoff there, right?
Yeah, it's a very slow-release product as well, and so that would be another opportunity there as well.
And is it really important to watch the weather forecast when you apply a slow-release fertilizer to control runoff?
Slow-release, it's going to release so slowly over time. I'm not as concerned about that runoff-wise because you know, it's going to break down over a series of 30 to 60 to 90 days, and so... more if you're using like a quick release, like a urea type product, that's when you don't want to apply that right before an inch rain or a 2-inch rain. That's when you have runoff.
All right. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Bill is on the line next in Independence. Sure. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
I have two apple trees. I had them 20-plus years. They're a no-spray variety. I've never sprayed them. But the last 2 years, I'm having trouble about this time of the year where the beetles and other insects are getting into them from the outside and just destroying them. Is there anything I can spray them with to get rid of the beetles without hurting the apples?
Well, as far as being pest-free, basically those varieties were disease-free. There is no variety that's insect-free. So... cedar apple rust, apple scab, they may be resistant to those, but as far as the insects, you still have things like apples, apple maggot, coddling moth, that type of thing. And so there are insecticides that you can use, things like, for example, 7, 8 would be a possibility. Most home garden centers also have like a home orchard spray. So make sure that what you buy is labeled for what you want to spray. Also, check to see if they have limitations on the number of applications, and also check on the waiting period as far as how long you have to wait after the application before you can harvest the fruit. So know all of that before you purchase a product.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Bill. And Richard, this is the kind of thing you've got to plan ahead on as well. This is
right.
Not something you get to take care of after you see the problem, right?
Right, right. You need to actually do that before you actually see the damage. And as far as a homeowner is concerned, you're not going to have the perfect fruit that you buy at the store. You're going to have some damage even if you apply these products. But if you do and do a good job of applying the product, you should have less damage and the fruit should be usable.
All right. And chances are it's going to taste a lot better than
right.
anything you can buy at a store, too. Desiree is on the line next in Alpha, Illinois. Hi, Desiree.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about pruning the trees in our yard. We have 3 ash trees and an elm tree. The ashes, 2 of them are at least 15 years old. The others are 20 or older. The ashes are healthy. We had them professionally treated in the spring. And I'm wondering if it's okay for us to do any tree trimming this time of year on those?
That's a great question. We just talked about that earlier, too. And really, fall is not the best time. I would wait either to the dormant season or actually the best for most shade trees other than oak is actually early summer. But this time right now, late summer, early fall, is really not the best time. Those trees are starting to make changes and stuff, and you actually want some of that material to get put back into the tree. So pruning that off now doesn't really help it get that energy in. So you're better off to wait. And if you can't wait till next summer, I would just do it during the dormant season. And the key is if you're lifting up in the yard and stuff for clearance and those kind of things, you want to leave those lower branches till they're about an inch in diameter, and you generally want to get them off before they're 2 inches. Or kind of the term that they use now is those lower branches, you want to get them off before they're half the diameter of the trunk. So if you have a 1-inch branch and a 2-inch trunk, you should be taking that 1-inch branch off. But you want to leave those lower branches on there for a little bit because they actually feed the trunk. So if you take them up too quick, you're actually kind of putting that tree out of balance. What you really want to focus on younger trees is making sure they have one straight leader and you prune those poor branches out. And again, the thing to remember is if you know that you want to clear 8 feet, those branches up to 8 feet are never going to move. So those are temporary branches that you eventually have to take off for that clearance, but we don't want you to go out one weekend and take them all off. So in your case, I would probably wait until they go dormant this winter or wait till early next summer once they leaf out and prune them then.
Okay, so like late May, June, sometime in there?
Yeah, let them leaf out, let them kind of get that growth. Because some of the new research is showing that from a wound response, when we cut a branch off, we're actually, killing that spot. And the tree grows over that. And they get better wound response if they do it early summer versus dormant season.
All right, Desiree, thanks a lot for your call. Let's slip in another call right before the break here. Kimberly in Iowa City. Hi, Kimberly.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
We planted a butterfly garden this summer, and one of the plants that we used was a milkweed, and it's not the tropical sort. And we had been noticing a lot of aphids, and before they got totally out of hand, we were daubing them with Q-tips dipped in isopropyl alcohol and then rinsing the plant. We went on vacation for a week, and the plant was just covered. So we snipped the stems that had caterpillars and laid those aside, doused the whole plant, just spraying it with isopropyl alcohol, waited 10 minutes, and rinsed it again. But is there a better way to try and fight the aphids on milkweed?
Well, you could use insecticidal soap, which you can buy at most garden centers, and that should destroy the aphids but not harm the other insects, so you could try that. Or you could just wash them off the plants with a really forceful stream of water, so you could do that also.
All right. And Kimberly, thank you so much for your call. We are going to have to take a short break here. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talks and email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, Iowa State University Extension Turfgrass Specialist Adam Toms, and Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Geron. We'll be back in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. We're here to answer your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Geron, and ISU Extension Turfgrass Specialist Adam Toms. A great team to answer your question. Next up, Aaron in Atlantic. Hi, Aaron.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My wife and I would like to start thinking about returning some of our turf grass into native prairie, basically, so wildflowers and grasses native to Iowa. A previous caller asked about how to kill off that grass, and you mentioned using tarps and tilling and things like that. I'm just curious what your recommendations are on how to go about actually changing from turf grass to native species and what the best time of year to do those things is.
Well, one way of doing that would be to go out, for example, with Roundup and apply that at this time of year. And as far as establishing the native grasses and wildflowers, obviously seed is one option. You can also buy young plants from some nurseries. But as far as seeding, basically fall is a very good time. So you could go out right now, apply your Roundup, and then maybe come back in October and sow your seed. I would look locally for some seed sources as far as a mix and see what you can find. There are some nice regional companies like Prairie Moon Nursery in Minnesota, Ion Exchange in Harpers Ferry, Iowa, and the Prairie Nursery in Wisconsin. So those are some regional companies, but there are also some local companies too. You might want to ask around maybe at the Conservation Service in your county and see if they have sources or know of sources.
I would add one thing too, Aaron. I would start small. There's a lot to this, and there's a lot of things involved. It's more than just spreading seed and kind of letting it go and also making sure it's what you want. I actually did this 17 years ago in my backyard, and I didn't use chemical in that case. What I did is actually peeled the grass off, and then I just raked it, and I spread the seed out. And with prairie seed, you want just very light contact. So I took the spare tire from my vehicle and ran that over where I just seeded just to make that contact. And 17 years later, I still have an ever-changing prairie in my backyard that changes every year with a little bit different stuff. And I try to reseed or throw things in. I actually just collected some the other day from a friend's prairie, some new plants. But like Richard said, the more local stuff you can get and local seed source and really stay away from anything that could be invasive or is non-native will really help. But I would consider starting small, and then you can always add on. But if you do too much and you go, why did we do so much, it's harder to go backwards. So that would just be one light suggestion.
All right, Aaron, thanks a lot for your call. And let's go to Bill on the line in Hudson next. Hi, Bill.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
My question was about Virginia creeper. I've got some growing out of a tree out of my garage. Is there any way to transplant that with a cutting, or do I have to find the root, or just don't bother trying?
Well, as far as a cutting, I don't think they'd root very well. It is a native plant. I think if you look, you may find maybe a seedling somewhere nearby, and you could dig that up. You can also buy it. It is sold in nurseries. It's basically used to maybe cover a wall or something of that type.
I was going to move it to an arbor, and it's kind of a weed where it's at. But
right. But realize that it is something that's very hard to remove once you plant it. It basically has kind of like a suction cup, which allows it to stick onto surfaces. And once you have it like on a building or a structure, it's very, very hard to remove, so be aware of that. It's a very tenacious plant.
Yeah, that's why I kind of wanted to get rid of where it's at. But, and also, these evergreens that you see people trim into square shapes and stuff, is that arborvitae?
That's typically a yew. Yews are very common. They actually have very distinctive needles. They're dark green. They tolerate shearing or pruning very, very well. And yes, some people prune those into very formal shapes like a round circle or a square, whatever. They tolerate right. that quite well.
And that can be planted in the fall?
You can plant those. I would prefer you're going to plant those to do that very soon. So they have a few weeks to get established before winter. So I would do it in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Right. Great. All right. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Bill. James is next in Des Moines. Hi, James. James, are you there?
Yes. I have spot in my yard where it looks like I've got a tunneling animal. And after I get rid of the animal, should I just overseed that?
All right, so you've got a bare spot in your yard because of a burrowing animal?
Well, it's more than a bare spot. It's like a tunnel.
Okay.
Yeah, I would just try to smooth it up as best you can and then go ahead and overseed.
The second question is, my pine tree is encroaching. Can I cut off some of the longer limbs, and when can I do that? And I'm talking about usually the lower ones.
You can, and with pine trees, again, you're going to get better response in the summer as far as the wounding and stuff and wound response, but you could do it this winter. But the thing that you want to do is you want to prune those back to what they call the branch collar. Usually if it's a pine, if you just prune like halfway back, most of the branch is going to die anyway. So you're probably going to want to go back to the trunk to what they call the branch collar and prune it there.
All right. And sounds like a good plan. Let's go now to Ian in Southeast Iowa. Hi, Ian.
Hi. I have a 160-acre white oak tree farm, and I've been having a lot of problems with tatters this year and last year, and I was curious on a response from your forester on what the DNR is doing about it.
Well, what the DNR is doing about it is we continue, Ian, to report it to the USDA Forest Service every year when we do a health report. We actually report it to them, and then it goes up from there. And we've reported it every year, Ian, that it shows up, and we will continue to do that. I know I've talked to Dr. Jesse Randall at Iowa State. And he indicates that he has some research that he's continuing to work on to continue to look at this. But we report it every year up through our system to let those folks know that we're seeing this. And actually, a year ago, myself and our forest health specialist presented to the Forest Service, because the only way that you can report these conditions is to have it on their list. And we actually made a presentation to convince them to put it on their list so we could report it, which we did. So now we can physically report it to them on a yearly basis to let them be aware of that condition and continue to look at what the potential cause is.
And there's a great deal of research going on into potential causes.
Well, I would say right now there's not a lot of research being done.
There's some.
There was some, and hopefully there's some more results coming out on some, but there needs to be more research. The problem with the DNR, we're not in position to do research. Iowa State University and some of those are in better position, but the other challenge is, like everyone is having, is where do we get the funding to be able to do that research? We continue to report it, and we continue to make people aware of, to try to show folks that this is a concern, because it's been a concern since 1995, Ian, and I've been on the bandwagon to try, and we seem to make a few steps each year, and we just got to keep going till we get to a point where we can figure out what it is.
So if it's one of your concerns, keep talking about it and complaining about it.
Right. People like Ian, that's great. Keep talking about it, that it is a concern. It is out there, and especially on white oak. To me, that's one of the species that we see it on the most.
Let's do a few email questions here. Emily in State Center, I'd like to relocate my 2- and 3-year-old peonies. Is now a good time?
I would say wait a few more weeks and do it in mid to late September. And just go out there at that point, cut the plant right back to the ground, dig it up with a spade, and then replant immediately. And when you do, plant it back at the same depth it's currently growing. Water it in nicely, and it should be fine.
All right, here's a question from Kathy. I moved to a place where most of the, quote, lawn behind and beside the house is mostly weeds, thistle, pigweed, lamb's quarter, white clover, and creeping Charlie. What's the best way to make a grass lawn out of this nightmare?
Yeah, so she's going to want to go ahead and spread some seed right now. If it's complete weeds, she may want to round up and do a fresh start. And, you know, hopefully she'll have grass up. If she does sprays Roundup like this week, she can go in another week later and seed, and hopefully she'll have grass up and growing by this fall.
All right, and she's also wondering what to do to keep the weeds from coming back if she does get grass going.
Yeah, so in the spring, she'll want to do some sort of a pre-emerge herbicide to prevent all the annual weeds. And then in the fall, after the first frost, go ahead and spray for broad leaves that might pop up through her grass stand.
All right, here's a question from Andy. I have an abundance of feral onions, I guess you would call them, coming up in my lawn every spring. It's unfortunate to come away from mowing the lawn smelling like onions. We can pull them easier after they've come up and mature and pull the bulbs out, but I'm curious if there's anything else we can do to get rid of the onions coming up in my lawn and sneaking into my flower gardens.
I want to know if there's tears also,
right,
as he mows.
That would make mowing even worse.
I'm not sure if it's wild onion or maybe wild garlic or maybe Star of Bethlehem. Those are all types of allium. They're extremely hard to get rid of. I don't have a good recommendation on that. They could try digging, but the herbicides are just not very effective on them. So it's a nasty situation.
Richard, would it help for him to try to get it identified to actually see what it is? Would that make a difference? Or?
They could try that, where they dig it up, sample, and send that to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic here at Iowa State.
All right, and here's a question from Greg in Cedar Falls. I have either Poa or Nimblewill taking over my lawn. How can I tell the difference?
Leaf structure would be the way to tell the difference. With Poa, it's going to be a boat-shaped leaf tip, so you're going to have to let the grass grow up and then look at it, look down the edge of the leaf tip and see if it looks like the front of a boat, and that would tell you that. Nimblewill is going to have some hairs around the collar, so that would be a way to tell that.
All right. Here's a question from Earl. Is it possible to grow a maple tree from a cutting? If so, how do I do it?
Oh, it's difficult. Most trees do not root readily from cuttings. Typically, we grow them from seed or with the cultivars, we typically do grafting on those. So it's very hard to actually grow them from cuttings.
And maple trees tend to produce a lot of seed.
They tend to. Not all of them, but they tend to.
And depending on which one, if he's looking at like sugar maple, those seeds would be maturing now versus like silver maple would first thing in the spring.
All right, so you can take some of the little seedlings out of your gutters.
That works.
That works.
All right, here's a question from Doug in Ames. We're planting a section of our lawn with a low-maintenance, drought-tolerant grass this fall. We'd like to avoid glyphosate, but how else can we kill off the old grass?
Again, tilling, trying to disturb that grass, some tarping. The key with the tarping would be a black tarp left on there for a while to try to build up some heat, try to smother out the grass. One of the problems there is that you're also going to kill out some of the positive microbes that are underneath there during smothering. So,
if he just overseeds with this kind of grass, if it just mixes in, would that work?
Yeah, I would try that. I would maybe try to scalp the yard and then aerify it and then do a heavy overseeding with this grass and try to move to it that way.
What do you mean when you say scalp the yard?
Yeah, so you're going to try to drop the mower down to an inch, try to cut back all the existing leaf tissue that's there, and basically stress the grass that's there so much to the point where it doesn't want to live.
All right. take away its will to live. Right.
Yeah, it gives up.
I've probably done that on accident myself. All right, let's get back to the phones. Ted in Anamosa. Are you still with us, Ted?
Yes, I am.
All right, what's your question?
My front lawn is thinning, and I have a mulcher mower, so do I need to thatch that before I aerate and seed?
Do you need to thatch the lawn before you aerate?
No, I would say a lot of people do thatching, and it's really not necessary. I would say if you aerify, if you're walking on it, it's really spongy, then yeah, you'd need to thatch it, but more than likely just a good aerification and then overseeding will be fine.
Thank you. That sounds great.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Ted. Jan is next in Atlantic. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I have a perennial issue with crabgrass. I've done pre-emergence for years. Hired a lawn service who did pre-emergence this year on my front yard crabgrass, and I still have a lot of crabgrass. How many years does it take to get rid of this stuff?
So crabgrass is a prolific seeder. One crabgrass plant has about 1 million seeds. So if it
drops it,
the seed bank is phenomenal. It'll be there for years. If you're having continued issues with, you know, what you think is crabgrass escaping the pre-emerge applications, things like that, you might want to dig up a couple plants and set them in for identification. It might not be crabgrass.
Well, I know about yellow nutsedge, and I know what they look like, and the little spores or whatever they're called that go into the ground.
Yeah.
And this is crabgrass, and I do have a lawn service who has identified it as crabgrass. So I'm just wondering, you know, I've been so patient. What else can I do? Can I dig it out and then reseed it or what?
Yeah, you can dig out crabgrass. There's a couple products out in the market as well that you can spray post-emergent-wise, and the lawn care company could do that for you as well.
Should she think about a second opinion?
Yeah, I would definitely think about a second opinion on that. It could be goosegrass, which is potential, and that it germinates later in the year. And so I would send it into the plant insect disease clinic and see what else there is, maybe if it's something else that maybe they've just misidentified.
All right. Sounds frustrating, Jan. Thanks a lot for your call. And I'm going to ask Michelle's question for her. Weed and seed now or later? And when?
I would do seeding now. I would do weeds later.
All right. And you've got, I want to mention your turfgrass field day coming up again. That's September 12th at the Horticulture Research Station. And Adam Toms, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Iowa State University Extension turfgrass specialist Adam Toms. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist Richard Giron and DNR forester Mark Vitosh, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
We'll be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.